Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium.
Hello, did we lose everybody?
I'm here.
Yeah, me too. I don't know where Bo went.
Well. Bobby, I couldn't believe they got a human neural.
Well, me neither.
He'll be a big asset.
If he can play, not be hurt. I seen their schedule this year, man.
I hadn't seen any schedule. What's it like?
Listen, son, they better suck up. They got
really
opening Sunday. They got New Orleans at New Orleans. They've got
New Orleans is gonna be different with what's his name back.
Oh yeah, they've got Frisco at Frisco during the season. They've got the Patriots. Jeez, who else have they got?
About Green Bay?
They got Green Bay this year.
Good Lord.
Oh, yeah, it's tough. It's tough. It's, I don't have it in front of me, but I know it's, they're going to have to suck it up to go 500 this year. I don't think they'll do what they did last year.
Bobby, you think that Geno Smith's any good?
That quarterback at West Virginia?
Yeah.
Everybody, all the sports talk people here in Atlanta say he's a diamond in the rough. They said somebody's going to get a deal when they take him. So, I don't know what's going to happen with him. Well, sir, I don't have any idea what happened to Bo here. I think the switchboard died.
Well, God knows.
I talked to Michael yesterday.
I was just supposed to tell you the same thing. It was good to hear him last week. How's he doing, Bob?
He called. He told me yesterday that they've got the legal papers filed with the court system now, and it's just a waiting game. He's hoping to hear something this week, maybe, or next week, of them setting a trial day, or a hearing date, but. Lawyers that don't get
you know, that is so wrong to drag something like that out.
Oh, yeah.
You know, yeah. Of course, they don't care. That's obvious. But, I mean, to do somebody like that in a traumatic situation like that, I mean, it's so wrong.
He told me yesterday, he said his biggest fear, he said if he can't get all this settled, he was hoping to leave May 1st and go back to work. Well, now it looks like it's probably going to be June 1st.
Oh, come on, Bobby.
But he said it's, you know, going to be another couple of weeks before he knows anything. But he said his biggest fear is, you know, not having a place to live when he comes off the road, unless he gets something settled. So, I don't know. But he's in good spirits. Everything's going well. He's looking up, so.
And, you know, Bobby, I mean, I've lost both of my parents and I was there the night my mother died, and I saw her die. But, you know, you have to suck it up and go on no matter how, you know. That's horrible to say or easy to say until it happens to you. But when you're going through it, you don't think you can get through it.
Oh, I know.
Well, my daddy always had a saying. He said, time takes care of everything.
Yep. Yeah, I tell people all the time, as hard as as hard as going through funerals and that sort of stuff is, I tell people, hey, believe it or not, this is the easy part. Hard part is you got to go home and live.
And exactly.
It's tough.
It's. Well, I don't know what we do here, sir. I'm sitting here watching.
I don't either. I think I'm gonna hang up and try to call back in and see what happens.
All right, that's what I'll do. I'll let you go first.
If that don't work, then I'll try to get a hold of Bo and see what's happening.
All right.
Bye-bye. I'll call you back if I get a hold of him if this don't work.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right,
bye.
Hello.
Hello. I got a feeling this thing's dead in the water tonight. Hello. Hello. Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
It's Gene.
Okay, we're having all kinds of technical problems. I think I've got them straightened out here. Hold on one second. All right. You still there?
Yes, Gene. Now, Bobby, I'm hung up trying to get a hold of you something, Bo.
Yeah, he's calling back in. Hold on. All right, call back in. I got it. All right. Nothing like live radio, is there?
Yeah, you know, Charlie Smith just called, and I accused him of paying you off where we couldn't advertise their Renegade T-shirts on there tonight.
Well, plug away, Renegade T-shirts.
Yeah.
You'll beat any price in town, won't you?
That's right, including Smith and Holiday Company.
Oh, goodness. I hear you. I'm waiting on them to call back in here. Hopefully, I don't know what happened. We lost everything at one time. It just went down. Let me see here. Are you there, Bobby?
Could I get an order of ribs with extra slaw to go, please?
Man, oh man, I'm have to use Misty to call back in. My phone is connected to the switchboard, but it's not working.
Okay.
I don't know what it is. Hopefully Jerry will call back in here.
Well, I was going to call him if I couldn't get you, so.
Yeah, so I got, hopefully he'll try us back here in just a second.
Okay.
And,
if he doesn't, I'll go offline and call him. And matter of fact, I'll walk back here and get my cell phone.
Once you do that, and while you do that, I'll call Handsome Jimmy here and get him on the line. Hopefully, this will work for all of us here.
All right.
This has been one heck of a day already.
Hi.
Handsome Jimmy.
Hey now, Bobo.
All right. We right when I called you to test the lines, and then right when we went live, we lost all the lines, but we've got you back up and running here.
Okay. So, it's all good.
Like live radio.
There you go, baby.
How are you and Miss Angel doing tonight?
Wonderful, wonderful, brother. Yep, she's downstairs sewing and getting a couple of the boys' outfits ready, and I just up here just chilling, man. It's all good, baby.
That's it. Well, did you have a good time in Vegas?
Yeah, real good, Bobo. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it was good, man. And enjoyed, and I talked to Ivan after, and he had a good time, and, you know, that was important. That was first time out there for Ivan, you know.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Can I get extra sauce with those ribs?
There you go, Bob Simmons.
I got a hold of Jerry. He'll be calling in just a second.
All right. I was telling Jimmy here, it's nothing like live radio. We
I'm
lost
telling
everything
you, man.
As soon as we went off the air.
We went south in a hurry.
Okay, let me make sure I got Jerry on here. You there, Mr. Oates?
I have never been so rudely called.
I think the two of you for keeping it going. Misty was in another room listening. I had to get another phone to call in. The main line went down, so I don't know. I'm having to keep it connected on my phone, and I'm using her phone. So, but we got Jimmy Valiant here with us, Bobby Simmons and Jerry Oates, and this should be a fun show.
Hey, Bobby. Hey, Jerry. How you doing, brothers?
Good.
Great to hear your voice, man. How you doing?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, brother. Good time.
So when was the last time you saw him, Jerry? You remember?
The last? Yeah, he won't remember. Cleveland, Ohio.
In Cleveland. Yeah. I know me and Luscious Johnny, we worked up there, your territory up there in it must have been 76. Yes.
You're not gonna remember this. I had knee surgery in 76, and
right.
I'd been out for 9 weeks, and after the nine weeks I did Atlanta TV that morning, and that night in Griffin, Georgia, Lou Thesz and I worked with you and Johnny.
Yeah.
And
I was so
leery of my knee, you know, because,
yeah,
you know, back then they opened you up. They didn't do the scopes.
Right.
And I'll never forget, I got in there with you, and you said, come on, brother, you're all right. You're well.
Yeah.
And you really helped me that night. I mean, you like pushing me, you know.
You bet, yeah. I do remember that, Jerry, yeah.
And
really.
I'll never forget you for that. You said, come on, brother, you're well.
It's all good, brother.
Yes, sir.
I tell people you can have a match with Handsome Jimmy in a body cast.
Yeah, well, I felt like I was in one, but he made all the difference, and I've never forgotten him for that.
Now, I will tell you something, Jerry. I bet you don't remember. Who was the referee for that match?
I think it was you.
It was me.
There you go.
Isn't that funny? Some things you remember like it was last night.
Yeah.
Some things you can't remember at all.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool, man.
Yeah, we got Jimmy on here because next weekend he's going to have a very special anniversary, 49 years in the ring. And Boogie, what drives you to keep making pounds and keep going?
Well, you know, I retired in December of 2004, and that was like 9 years ago. And then my lovely wife, Angel, I'm very happy in the White House. We got a little old farmhouse here on our compound where our wrestling camp and Hall of Fame is. And she got the bright idea, man, you know, let's build a little cabin, you know, up there. That's her dream home on her compound. And I says, way up high up on the hill. And I says, that's fine, you know. Hey, where am I going, man? You know, it don't matter. And I said, that's cool. I mean, not that I got no money, but it don't matter, man. I was, that was 9 years ago. I was, I'm 70 now, so I was, 61 or something then. I says, it's cool, man. I mean, hey, we'll do it as we can, you know. So to make it short, man, you know, we broke ground and we started building it. And, man, it's been all these years. We're still not in it. So finally, I says, man, I got to get the boots out back so I can make a little jack so that we can. Otherwise, hey, I'm not going to be able to enjoy it myself, you know. So I'm back in there now. Bobo, he keeps booking me, man. And I says, what do you want me, a referee? You want me to manage your, be your commissioner for a night? And he said, no, man, we'll do a little match. You know, I said, okay, man. So I just put the boots back on and, you know, just. That was the whole deal right there. Was the log cabin, but hey, I hope we can get in a couple of years so I can retire.
Where are you living, Jimmy?
Up in Virginia, Jerry, and it's up around the Roanoke. It's in Shawsville, Virginia.
Oh, okay.
And I say Shawsville, and everybody says, "Oh, I know where that's at," and they think I'm saying Charlottesville, but this is Shawsville. Shawsville, we're real close to Roanoke, Christiansburg, 15 miles from Virginia Tech, but that's Blacksburg, Virginia, up in the mountains. Man, it's beautiful up here, you know, and
yeah,
we've been here 22 years, and it's just a beautiful place.
You get up there where Boogie's place is at, up on that mountain, you can see for miles and miles in every direction. When he says on top of the hill, that's what he means.
Yeah, it is. We're in the New River Valley, and it's really a great area here. You know, as far as the weather, and it's gorgeous. And I know up in Georgia, man, and up in Tennessee, man, and Chattanooga, the mountains, and of course North Carolina, and it's beautiful. You know, all mountains are beautiful, and we're right in them.
Well, you know, most people they remember the Boogie Woogie Man because that's what they see now on all the 24/7s and the DVDs and stuff that's out there. But you know, a lot of people don't realize that how long of a run that you and Johnny had as the Valiant Brothers, and they don't realize before that you were Jim Valentine and John the Body Valen, and you know, someone just take a minute and tell people how you got started there in Chicago.
Yeah, I will, Bobo. You know, everything's in my book. I'd give it a little plug, man. I got a hard copy book, man, at 566 pages. It's the biggest wrestling book out there, man, and it's called "Woo, Messy Daddy, Welcome to My World, the Jimmy Valiant Story." You know, and I started wrestling 1964, and half my career, you know, was as Handsome Jimmy Valiant, you know, and the bad guy, man, the big heel and strutting, the one, the blondes and the muscles and all that, man, you know, and then you know, in the 80s, early 80s, I went to Mid-Atlantic, and man, you know, I look around, man, and there's all these blonde, muscled up and strutting around. Flair was there, and Buddy Landell was there, and you know, I said, man, I've done this for 20 years, you know, the same deal, and so then I started growing a big long beard, and I started going out to music and started kissing and hugging people, man, and I really reinvented myself and had another 20 years as a crowd pleaser, a good guy, as the boogie woogie man, you know. And so I was very fortunate to have really two different complete careers, you know. Me and Johnny, the Handsome Jimmy and Luscious Johnny, the Valiant Brothers, Bobo, as you know, we had a real good run, man. And part of that, man, was right there in the Peach State, man, you know. I really had some great times there. And I know Bobby, man, and Jerry and the Dope Brothers and, of course, it was a great time, man. It was on fire, man, you know, that territory. And me and Johnny, we went to New York three different times, over a year each time for the WWWF. And then we went out to Frisco, man, you know, for Shires. And we went to Minneapolis, you know, for Ganya, you know, and stayed over a year. And so we had a real good run, you know, me and Johnny, and then I was very fortunate to, and Johnny too went on and did other stuff, but I was fortunate to become the boogie woogie man, you know, and all these stories, all this is in my autobiography, you know, and hey, you can check it out, you know, on JimmyValiant.Weebly.com, and that's a real good website. That Magnet Man does for our camp and myself, and it's JimmyValiant.Weebly, and Weebly is called is spelled W-E-E-B-L-Y. So it's JimmyValiant.Weebly.com, and check that out. And Bobo, we got a new email, which I just sent you. Angel just got all that done. I don't even know how to plug in the computer, man, you know, but she does, and she does all that for me, man. But when I write someone, if you get an email or something, or Facebook or from me, it's from me, but she's doing all the typing. But our new one is JimmyValiant@outlook.com. Let me see here. Outlook. JimmyValiant@outlook.com. That's the new. It just happened this week, man. You know, we're out here and we had dial up all this time. I know Bo sometimes try to get me, man, and it's been busy, and he's that boogie's on the angel. They're on the email thing. But now we can the phone rings, man, and we got this other surf. So
you finally got into the right century.
There you go, brother, man. Hey, Jerry, you know, and Bobby, I don't even have a cell phone. Bo knows I don't have no cell phone, man. And my phone, we're talking on the landline. And I'm talking about old school, brother. And I don't know who's calling me. I don't have a dial waiting or whatever. I don't have no gimmicks, man. You know,
you're better off. You're better.
There you go. You bet. Hey, brother.
At 9 to get a hold of me.
Yeah, you bet. Hey, at 9 o'clock, brother. You know, I unplug the phone, and me and Angel, we go to bed. And the thing is, because there ain't nothing you can do, even an emergency, man. You can't do nothing in the middle of the night, you know. So, but I get up early, brother. Hey, you know, I get up at 6, you know, and, hey, I plug the phone right back in, and it's on all day, you know. But check out the JimmyValiant.Weebly.com, brother, and then, of course, go to my new one. Is if you want to write me, man, is JimmyValiant @outlook.com.
It sounds like he's found Mayberry, which is what I'm looking for.
I'm telling you, Bobby, you would love it up there where he's at. People think I live in the country. They need to go to boogies.
You know, yeah, that's true. Hey, Bobby, you know, with Shawsville, our little town here, man, it we don't even have a stoplight, brother, you know, and it was so cool that Bobo's been on. We did the Valiant Cup here for 10 years to help our middle school, which was the old high school, but anyway. There's not even a stoplight here, and for 10 years, man, hey, we would pack the place. You know, 400 or 500. At the last show, me and Ivan went in the ring against a couple of my students, and we had 700 people there, brother. So it was just unreal, you know, a fundraiser for the school. But that shows you, you know. A little town, a little what you can do. Of course, I promoted that thing for 3 months, man. You know.
Yeah. I tell you something about that night there with you and Ivan. Me and Misty talked about this for a long time. Never have I ever been somewhere where two wrestlers had as much respect as the people that give them that night. People came that night from Virginia, North Carolina, West Virginia. I mean, they came from all over, and just to see the way that they were. In awe of Jimmy Valiant and Ivan Koloff, people that grew up in the Mid-Atlantic Territory, probably thinking they would never get the chance to sit down and meet them there, and was something to see. Hmm. And there's still wrestling fans out there, but most of the wrestling people have ran them off. You can still find them.
Yeah,
there you go.
I wish Jimmy would take 5 minutes. I had the privilege of being in Las Vegas with him last week, and I heard his speech he gave when he gave Ivan his award last week. Jimmy, I wish you would tell Jerry that story you told when you gave him the plaque. I've been in the ring as a referee with Ivan Koloff, and I know how hard it is for me to keep up with him. But yeah. When you told that story, that's one of the funniest things I've heard in a long time, and I knew how true it was. I wish you would share that with Jerry.
You bet, Bobby. You know, man, I love Ivan. I told everybody, you know, me and Ivan, man, we got a lot in common, man. I says, you know, first of all, we love Jesus, you know, and I says, you know, and we were both born in August of 1942, you know, both of us, and we both started, you know, in the early 60s, and I've known him, you know, that for almost 50 years, you know, and I says, you know, I says, in the 60s, we were together in Indianapolis for Dick the Bruiser, WWA, and I says, then in the 70s, we were up in New York for Vince McMahon Sr., you know, the WWF, and then in the 80s, in fact, the whole decade almost until they sold out to Ted Turner, you know, in November of 88, I believe it was. And the whole from 80, 81 all the way till they sold Turner, we were together in Charlotte for the Crockett's, the Mid-Atlantic, NWA Mid-Atlantic. So I says, Ivan, in 1981, Ivan was their TV champion. The stipulation on that belt, Jerry, you know, which you know, is you have to beat their champion, their TV champion, within 20 minutes. And if you didn't, the bell would ring, the match would be over, and the belt remained with their TV champion. So you know, me and Ivan worked this program, brother, for over a year, man, you know, and 7 days a week. Crockett had three shows a night, man. They had a big, huge territory, and so me and Ivan was working 7 days a week for over a year together. I was chasing that belt. And the thing is, you know, we were going to 20-minute Broadway, and what I told everybody, I said, at the beginning of the program, I wasn't in the great shape that Ivan was in, because Ivan was a machine. I mean, you all know, you know, everybody knows. You work with Ivan, and he was in great shape, and I mean, he would go, man, you know. And so I said, the bell would ring, man, 7 days a week. The bell would ring. thing, and I had to get in shape, which I did, and I had to get in fast, man, because he blew me up every night. So here's how it started. The bell would ring, and Ivan would charge me, and I'd punch him, and I'd kick him, man, and I says, there's no wrestling done, man. I mean, you know, in this 20-minute Broadway, I says, this was a dog fight, brother, with Ivan, you know, and I'd bite him, I'd scratch him, man, and then Ivan would he'd start calling his spots, you know. He says, Boogie, shoot me in, give me that big high backdrop, you know. And then he'd say, Boogie, you know, slam me off the top, you know, off the top rope, you know. And Boogie, throw me out of the ring, you know. And then he'd say, run my head into the post, you know. Hit me with a chair, man. He'd say, bust me open the hard way. And brother, I'm telling Ivan, I'm begging. I says, stop me, brother. And he kept feeding me, taking these big bumps, man. You know, and so around the 10-minute mark, you know, I told everybody out there in, you know, at Vegas, because I presented Ivan with you know, his special award, you know, and the Iron Mike award. And around the 10-minute mark, Jerry, man, I was so blowed up. My tongue was hanging out, out and down, man, like a long red necktie, man. You know, I couldn't breathe. I was so blowed up. So finally, I grabbed one of Ivan's hands with both of my hands, you know, and I would take I'd take his hand and put it on my eye. And I would actually rake my own eye with Ivan's hand, and boom, and then I'd start selling, man. I'd start selling, man, you know, and I'm trying to, you know, get some wind, man, you know, and then, hey, Jerry, then I'd call my first spot. I'd say, brother, shoot me in. Bear hug. You know, that was my rest hole, brother. Hey, I'm telling you, he was killing me, you know. But, brother, you know, he was such a great performer. And I did, and I meant this, you know. I told everybody, I says, that Ivan Koloff, you know, I says, this is what type of a professional wrestler Ivan Koloff was, you know. I says, he always made his opponents look better than they were. And hey, I can tell you today, brother. I mean, that's the gospel, man. What a professional, and I just love him. He's my brother, man. You know, I've always called him brother, and his lovely wife, you know, Renee. I called her sister from day one. You know, hey, they're just great people, and what a performer.
Yeah, he was one of the hardest working guys I ever worked with. Really, I mean, he, like you said, he didn't stop.
No, brother, and never, you know. And, you know, Louis Martinez, you all know, he was one of the greatest Mexican stars, in the world, really. And he was one of my first mentors, you know. And Pepper Gomez, he got more of a than Louis did, you know. But Louis was such a hard worker, brother. If you ever been around, just like Ivan, Louis would work out in the dressing room, Jerry, you know, running in place, you know. If his match is on, you know, next, you know, he'd start running. Well, he'd run down the hall, and he'd be running. He's all got all this stuff on, ready to go. He worked up a sweat, man, and then, he, you know, for like 20 minutes, you know, and then the match is over, the bell would ring, and he'd run down the aisle, man, and get in there, arriba, arriba. And, brother, then he'd go 20 minutes, man, and then he'd run back down the aisle, and then he'd get there, and he'd still be doing push-ups and doing all kinds of stuff. You know, I mean, just a fanatic, workout fanatic. And Ivan was the same way, man. He had this wheel, you know, that some of the boys used to use in the dressing room, and he'd go out. It was real good workout. And he'd do that before. I seen him do it after, you know. And he was there, brother. Good shape.
Yeah, he was always in excellent shape. What was your favorite territory?
You know, man, I was so fortunate to be able to work in, you know, the big ones and the small ones too. But man, I was just so fortunate to be, you know, as I said before, I went to New York three times. I went to Memphis, you know, probably six times, and you know, which a lot of the people, you know, at that time and earlier, you know, they would, you know, knock Tennessee, you know, but not the Memphis end, you know, not when Lawler and Jarrett took it, and I'm not putting Gulas down or nothing, brother man, but a lot of people, you know, they had a bad, you know, reputation there, you know, making money and what, but brother, hey, I can't, man, I always made money in Memphis, man, you know, no matter if Lawler or Jarrett was booking, you know, because they would, you know, take turns 6 months and each, you know, to book it. And brother, no matter who was booking, brother, I made money, and I loved the Memphis. And of course, you know, Georgia, man, hey, you know, it was great, great territory, you know. And of course, Minneapolis and Bruiser with Dick the Bruiser, Indianapolis, you know, it was just a good times, man.
What was your last full territory you were?
Charlotte, sure. and yeah, when Turner bought, see, we were all on contract. We were the first to sign contracts. And they were in about 85 or whatever it was, 86 or 85, I think. We signed 3-year contracts. I think it was 25 guys, and Koloff was one, and me, and Flair, and Paul Jones, and you know, Dusty, and you know, whoever was there. That's what when they signed. Our contracts were up in that November, and that was the date that they signed, and we were all free, and you know, we were told, hey, you go to Atlanta, and you know, Jerry, everybody went, but there was a handful of guys, and of course we were all older, Ivan, myself, Paul Jones. You know, there was a handful of guys that didn't go. Everybody for a different reason. You know,
right. But
it was nothing to go fight for your job. You know, your spot, because that's all we did every time you went to a new territory anyway. But I was going through a divorce and a couple other things was, you know, on my mind. So I didn't choose to go. And that's when I started going, you know, just independently. And there was hardly anybody doing that at that time. And boy, then companies, you know, sprung up everywhere. You know, I just had a complete new career then, you know. And in fact, Bo James, I met him just shortly after that. Maybe 1990 or 89.
89,
I met him in,
I think. I think 89. 89.
And,
yeah.
Yeah, man, and he's just a young kid, man. And he said, man, I'd like to use you. And I'm looking at this kid, you know. I met him in Nashville. We went to some type of, in fact, Ivan was there and at that time. But that's the first time I remember
Bo. Yeah, I had used Ivan several times. He was the one that introduced me to you.
There it is, right? And I'm looking, and I said, well, where are you, you know, working? And he says, Kingsport. And I said, well, man, that's not far, you know, from me. So man, I hooked up with Bobo, and I've been with Bo ever since, you know. That's 20-something years, you know.
Yeah.
And
we have spent every Christmas together since then.
You bet. You know, big shows. He runs a big show on Christmas, and he's got his legend show once a year, and he uses me, and you know, and of course I bring him up here. In fact, you know what? Next year, Jerry and Bobby, we're going to do my 50th wrestling anniversary, and in fact, I got Bo doing a Q&A and with us, and you know, we're making a DVD of all this, and so he's already booked for that. So Bo's been good to me, and I'll tell you, his wrestling company, and I've watched him mature from a young boy, you know, just a young teenager man, you know, and his mom and dad that to a matured and a not only a great worker but a great booker and a businessman, and hey, I just take my hat off to the kid.
You explained to him, Bo, that he don't get a check, right?
Yeah, baby.
I'll tell you this about Boogie. We truly are family. We all know, you know, there's we know a lot of people, but we have very few true friends.
There you go.
And Jimmy has opened his home to me, and I've opened mine. You go into my sister's homes, my mom and dad's home, anybody, there's a picture of Jimmy Valiant hanging in everybody's house in my family. And like I said, he comes every Christmas for us. We spend Christmas Day together. We used to do the Greenville, South Carolina that day, and then we would drive to Kingsport and do my town that night. I couldn't tell you how many trips I've made with him and how many miles we've traveled on the road in almost 25 years. But, you know, he's family, and we got an unspoken. If he calls, I go. If I call, he comes. I mean, it's just we're always there for each other.
There you go, brother.
And growing up being a big, handsome Jimmy fan, watching Memphis TV and Charlotte TV, you know, it's something that, and we talk about that a lot, Bobby. You know, our heroes become our friends and
yep.
Become like family. And I tell everybody that Boogie's he's my second dad. He's my wrestling dad. You know, when I was still in high school, you know, I'd get out and go summer months, I would travel on the road with him. So, I mean, he had me all summer.
You bet.
And I travel with his son, which I consider to be like my little brother, little Hans.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. And I've watched all your nephews grow up, and you know, of course, and your mom and dad. I love them, and just family, brother. You're right, Bobo.
And I tell everybody this too: if you're ever up in Virginia, you need to make one trip, at least one trip, to see that museum that he's got up there. He's got five buildings full of everything from every territory that he worked, ring jackets and tights that the boys had given him to hang up in there. He's got his own Hall of Fame. He's got something to see for every wrestling fan. And I've been there to see people from all – I've met people from Germany, Japan, and everywhere there at Boogie's Museum.
Yeah. You know, in fact, Bo, thank you, and Jerry and Bobby and everybody listening, I want to invite you all to – we're only open on Sundays from 12 noon to 4 o'clock, and 52 Sundays a year. Don't matter what Sunday it is. Like last year, Christmas fell on Sunday, but we were open from 12 to 4, and as soon as it was over, I went straight to the Kingsport to do Bo's show, but I'm there every Sunday. I always make it back for Sunday. And the good thing about this is you come any Sunday and spend a day with us. Again, look it up, jimmyvaliant.weebly.com, and there's a map how to get here. It explains everything. But the good thing about this is you come be my guest, mine and Angel's guest, and there's no charge. There's no ticket to buy. Everything's free. You go to enjoy the museum, the Hall of Fame, watch the kids train, you know. It's just a great, great deal. And the thing is, after 4 o'clock, the gate closes, and the compound is closed up, and just it's all out here in the country. Across the street, there's cows and milk cows, and there's a river running, and the mountains. It's like we're in the valley. You can touch the mountains. It's just so beautiful. But man, is it rock on Sundays from 12 to 4. Boy, I mean, it's clinging and clanging, and there's stuff going on constant 4 hours, man. And it's 52 Sundays a year. But please, anybody, if you're ever in the great state of Virginia, you come by and be Angel my guest and spend a day with us. And again, it's all free. This is something I give back to the wrestling fans, you know, and this is our 22nd year here. So this September will be our 21st graduation, and so brother, hey, I'd love for you, Jerry and Bobby. I'd love to see you here someday.
It sounds like a great place, man.
Thank you.
You could go 5 or 10 times and not see everything that's in there. And I tell you, the vision that he had, the first time I ever went up there is when they were first breaking ground on this, and it was just the side of a hill. He still had the goat farm there then, and he said, I'm turning this into this compound, and all I see is rock, trees, and goats. And I think, what are you talking about? But, you know, a little bit at a time, he's built it. I tell everybody it's Disneyland for wrestling fans.
You know, Bo, we had them family of goats for 7 years, and the reason I did is to clear all this land off, and I just got like 2.5 acres, but it's completely fenced in compound, but it was so thick. It was an old farmhouse which me and Angel lives in now. We call it the White House, and at that time, I mean, there was never been cleared. I mean, honeysuckle and briars and these goats. They did such a good job clearing all that land off, you know, out to build everything on, and I was constantly building, that they ate theirself out of a job. So finally I had to get rid of the goats. I gave it to a farmer down the road, and they had some goats, and so they're doing great. But then of course, we started putting in sidewalks and we do. We have, two dressing rooms. I got my office. I got, the main camp building. We got the Hall of Fame building. And we got thousands and thousands of pictures collaged on the walls. And Bobo's right, man. I mean, it's just something that people has gave me so much stuff, you know, for the museum and pictures and of everybody, you know. Jerry, I know you and Bobby's up there. I know you are, because, brother, everybody in the business is up on the wall somewhere.
Yeah.
Well,
I hope I am.
Yes, you are, brother. I'll guarantee you and Ted yes, sir.
Tell them, you know, compared to, like, you know, you have a great place there for guys to come, young guys get in the ring and work out on Sundays. But tell them the difference, the people that's listening, for like where you trained when you first started in Chicago or Hammond.
Yeah, you know, Bobo, you know, here at BWC is Boogie's Wrestling Camp Hall of Fame Museum. You know, we teach the old school stuff, you know, and I tell the kids, I tell everybody, you know, but we teach the new stuff too. You know, you got to teach the new stuff too, like they see on WWE, because otherwise you get lost in the shuffle. But we teach the old school, because, hey, you know, if you don't, that's going to be a lost art, you know. It's like Jerry, if your grandmother didn't pass on certain recipes, you know, for her biscuits or some family recipe to your mother, then it'd be a lost family recipe, and then your mother passed it to your sister, right? And your sister passed it to her daughter. You got to continue this, just like Bo, his company, man. It's all old school stuff, but it's still the new. You know, we got the new kids doing the stuff, man, and so we teach. You get both. You get both here at BWC.
Tell them the first wrestling match you ever saw.
Well, the first wrestling match I ever saw was in it, man. You know, it was so funny. Again, this is in my autobiography, but I was with the Volkov brothers. That's who trained me, and Nikolai and Boris Volkov. Now I'm not talking about Nikolai Volkov, you know, from the 70s and which he teamed up with Iron Sheik, and I'm talking about the original Nikolai Volkov. These guys worked, and Boris, these guys, Volkov brothers, these guys worked in the 40s and the 50s, and these are the guys that trained me and broke me in. And Boris, he owned a health club, a gym, and I was there working with him. start out as a, in high school, man, just working out, and then he made me instructor, and then he made me, I was 20 years old, man, and I'm his manager of the health club, and I knew he wrestled and all this, and then he came to me and says, Jimmy, you know, man, you got to do this. You got a, you're good looking, you got nice hair, you got a good body, man, and because I was training, and I says, oh, okay, man. And so he said, I'm going to break you in. So anyway, he broke me in, me and another kid that was there, and at the health club, and so another instructor. So anyway, it was so funny because they were on top in Chicago at St. Andrew's Arena, this is like 4 weeks after he was training me, you know, and we trained an hour a day, but he had some kind of a minor operation done on his head. And it blew out, both eyes swelled up, and they were closed and black, and his forehead blowed up, and so he had to get out of town. He went to Florida to recuperate. So he called the promoter and says, I'm sending, he can't wrestle, so he says, sending the Valentine brothers, and Jimmy and Gary Valentine from Hollywood, California, they're taking my place. So I says, anyway, he, man, we don't even know how to tie our shoes or nothing, man. He just went to K&H and brought our shoes and tights back, trunks back. But the thing was, he says, now go downstairs. And in the health club, we had a masseur, an old-time wrestler there. And in fact, he was one of our world champions, man. And the same belt that Flair and Race and Briscoe and all these boys had, the Funks, you know, the NWA world champion. His name was Bobby Manigoff. And in fact, he was a champion in 1942, the year I was born, you know. So the thing is, that week he said, go down and Bobby will, you know, explain everything to you. And they didn't even, we weren't even smart to the business, man. You know, the old timers, brother, they were rough on the kids. But anyway, we got through the first match, and I never was in the ring because he would train us in a dojo room, just a karate mat down on the floor where they did the karate stuff. And the first match me and Gary we were in was the main event, and we went against Billy Gills and Johnny Gilbert, and these guys were called the G-Men, and they were hot there in Chicago, man, and they were in their prime, and we were just starting out, but that's how I got into business, brother. But I fell in love with it, and that's the only thing I've ever done, really, only job I've ever had in my life. And Bobo, that's the only job you've had in your life.
Yeah,
too.
That's it. How many guys were your size? Well, I mean, because people that see you now, you know, you slendered down as you got a little older and stuff, and your knees, you know, you lost, what did you lose, 60, 70 pounds?
Or 100, man, you know.
But in your prime, you were 300. I mean, you were a 300-pound guy. I mean, you were big.
I'm not really. I was lucky. God made me, 6'3", and I had the height, and I'm not that big bone. I was really slim in high school. I played football, man, and always real lean. And I started working out bodybuilding, and then they kept saying you got to gain weight when I started wrestling. So I had a good body, but they wanted me bigger, so I just started force feeding. I did it all myself, man. I started eating 6 sandwiches for lunch. I'd drink a gallon of milk a day, a dozen eggs a day, and to get big. It was like I got up to, my goal was 300. I got up to 290, but it was way too much for me, doing that. But anyway, my whole career, roughly, I wrestled like 230, 240, and I maintained that, But oh yeah, man. Hey, then now I'm lean. I wear the same pants, you know, same size pants I did in high school. You know, so I'm right back where I was. And you know, why carry all that around with you? You know, so yeah. I'm just real lean now, and hey, just boogie woogie, man.
What was the worst injury you had, Boogie?
Well, the worst one is the knee blew out with Lawler in Memphis, man. And of course, you know, if you got a bad shoulder, bad wrist, bad anything, you know, neck, back, you know, anything you can get around it, because you know you're working with the boys, and we just like Jerry, man. You know, he came off that surgery and. Man, you know, hey, I took care of a man, you know, and just like they would do that to me too. But when your wheels are done, you can, well, Jerry can tell you, that's the worst injury, because you know, brother, you can't work. If you can't move, man, you know. And I'll tell you a funny story. I blew out, and we were on top. I mean, and it's blowed out, man. And we were on top the next day. You know, before I could even get anything done, and brother and Jarrett went nuts. You know, oh man, oh, you know, gotta, you, handsome, you gotta come, you gotta, you know, this and that. And I said, okay, brother, man, but man, I don't know, you know, what I can do. And so they just had me come out of the dressing room, man, and you know, and then Lawler, he came and you know, Pearl harbored me right there, brother, right there on the dressing room door. And then, you know, I could start selling my leg there. And man, he drugged me and I crawled, and we worked the match because, you know, Jared didn't want to give the money back to the people. So we worked the match, brother, and I could sell the leg, the whole thing. And he took care of me, man. And we got by with it, you know, but, hey, you know, that show business, brother.
Well, you got to be there. You're advertised. They want to see you.
That's right. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Here's another thing, and I tell this to Boogie all the time, and Bobby and Jerry probably agree with this too. When you look at the Valiant Brothers and you look at the Boogeyman, and you see the stuff today that people copied from. You guys were trendsetters in New York. You were the first guys with writing on your tights with sayings and your, more than just your initials. You know, and you see that all the time now. You guys went to the ring with music years before it was cool, before everybody,
you know,
was doing it.
Yeah, you know, the music part, the Grand Wizard, God bless him, Ernie Roth, and he managed me, and this was before Johnny and me hooked up, but they teamed me up with Beautiful Bobby, and not Beautiful Bobby Eaton, God bless, I love Bobby, but this was Beautiful Bobby Harmon, and we were first to come out to Madison Square Garden to music, and this was 1970-71, the Grand Wizard remembered that Gorgeous George came out to music on TV a few times, so he came out to so he remembered it, and that's what we did. And brother, I took that on, and then I finally did a couple records in Memphis, you know, with Sam Phillips, and Jimmy Hart was with me to write the music and the songs, and I came out to music that way. And you know, and then brother, it's so funny because I was first to come out to music in the late 70s, and then in the early 80s when the Boogie Woogie Man came, nobody was using music, you know, and I'd come out to a boy from New York City and dance, and then I'd be kissing and hugging everybody, and the music and the people was popping, man, because it makes you dance, you know, make you want to clap your hands and stomp your feet. And And then all of a sudden, you know, you're Dusty and Flair and everybody started using music, which is cool. And even in Memphis, when I came out to my own records, then Lawler, he came out to music, and Dundee and Austin Idol and all the guys started using music. But you know, to be different at the beginning, it was so different, man. You know, that's how it got over so strong and fast. But now, if I had the opportunity, because now everybody uses music from the first match up, you know, everybody.
Yeah.
And what I would do to be different, man, is I would ask, hey, I don't want to come out to no music. I mean, because it would be different, you know, because you got to be different, man. You got to be thinking, and I'd go that way.
Was there anywhere that you went when you went into territories? I mean, because like you was talking about when you went into Charlotte and there was all the Bleach Blonde guys doing the scrub and doing all that stuff. I mean, how many other places did you go to where there was somewhere along that line of you and Johnny? You and Johnny were the first set of the blonde guys in New York since the Grams, so it had been almost 20 years
when
you guys came in there since they had somebody like that.
You bet. Yeah, man. You know, you know, and the thing is, hey, man, you know, we was the first to have, you know, I did the earrings, man, you know, and I had first to get tattoos. Everybody's got all this stuff now. I wish I didn't have earrings and tattoos now. That'd be different, brother. You know? Vince up there, he says, man, I don't want no more tattoos. I want guys, you know, with no tattoos, you know. So that'd be different, you know. But, it's almost the Handsome Jimmy, the Boogie Woogie Man's bedtime, brother,
that's
man.
That's it. I'm going to let you go here. So I'm going to ask Bobby this real fast. Bobby, when Jimmy caught fire in Charlotte, what kind of buzz was they in Atlanta? Because it wasn't too long before they had him on Channel 17.
Yeah, it was different. He hit it right on the head. Anytime anybody came up with something new and different, everybody wanted a piece of it. I mean, you know, the total persona and the total change. You know, and I wonder how many people, you know, fan-wise, I'm not sure a lot of them actually picked up that it was the same person that was part of the Valiants when they were in Georgia. Maybe they did, but I don't think so because it was so different. It was a wild time. All they had to do was start that music.
Yeah, you know, Bobby, you know, you're right, brother, because I came in real fast. I came in Crockett's, and they didn't want to use Handsome Jimmy, but so they gave me King James, and they teamed me up with Valentine. I was a heel, and we worked maybe... they gave us a little TV, but they didn't give us much TV because Valentine was leaving to go to New York. So me and Valentine that summer worked with Ebony Diamond, which is Rocky Johnson, and Bad Leroy Brown. So we had that whole summer, man, a good little program going. And they didn't want to give neither one of us too much TV because Valentine's leaving, so we just went to the house shows and did interviews had a good summer. But then when they switched me back to the Boogie Woogie Man, they sent me to Memphis for 6 weeks. And then to start my beard and all that, I came back to Mid-Atlantic. They didn't know I was King James, man. I came out as a boogie woogie, man. So I can imagine they didn't know that was the Valiant, one of the Valiant brothers.
I don't think they did.
No. They're the perfect example because I was just gone 6 months. I mean 6 weeks, and came back as the Boogie Woogie Man and. Instead of King James and the people, man, they just got right on it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Before we let you go, Boogie, tell you your best Lou Albano story. Because you spent a lot of years with Lou Albano in New York.
Oh, brother, man, hey, Captain, you know, he was He was wild, man. I tell you, I love him. God bless him, man. He, you know, he was wide open. And Tony Altimore, that was his tag team partner as the Sicilians. You know, he could get him going, brother, man. We're in Washington D.C. We used to do TV in Washington D.C. Every Thursday, and in fact, Vince had a Vince Senior. He had an office there, and we all go to the office, and we'd get our checks, and we'd do TV, and then we'd go eat, and so me and Captain Lou and Tony Altimore and Johnny, and we're walking down the street there, man, to go from their office to a restaurant that we're going to eat. It was in the afternoon before we go and do TV that night. Anyway, and so we're walking, and Lou, he's not paying attention to nothing, man. We're talking, we're laughing, man, and you know, and Tony says something. Hey, Lou. Yeah, Tony. Did you see that guy? He almost bumped into you. What guy? That guy right there. And Lou turns around, and here's a businessman. I mean, he could have been a senator or something. I don't know. We're in Washington, D.C. He's got a briefcase, man, and he's walking, you know. And Lou said, hey, you, hey. And the guy turns around, you know, and looks at the four of us, and Captain Lou, you know how he looks. What you say? What are you bumping? Hey, who do you think? Hey. And the guy's looking, and he's, you know, he keeps walking, of course, and Lou's going, walking towards him, and the guy's, he going faster, Lou's going faster. Pretty soon, the guy starts running, Lou's running, yelling at him. I mean, you know, he could just fire him up on anything. You know, just like, hey, that guy over there, Lou's looking at you, sort of cock. What guy? Hey, you, hey, what are you looking at? You know what I mean? I just love him, man. God bless him, man. Yeah, man. Hey, thanks for having me on, guys.
Glad
man.
To have you. You got next weekend, the 4th and 5th, is that right, May? That's your anniversary weekend?
Yes. Yeah. We're going to do the Valiant Cup this year, as Bo, you and Misty's there, and they're going to be in a missed tag, and we're going to go to Elkin at the National Guard Armory, and it's the May the 4th, so y'all come, anybody in North Carolina there, it's Elkin, North Carolina, National Guard Armory, May 4th, and then the 5th is my 49th wrestling anniversary. And George South and Stan Lee is going to be here doing a Q&A. We're going to have a big birthday cake, man, anniversary cake, and come out and spend the day with us there, please. And Bo, I know you and Misty is going to be there too.
We're going to spend
the whole weekend with us. And as I say, next year, the 50th, Bo, that's when you're going to do your Q&A with us. And be part of that, my 50th, and we're going to put all this together for one big last DVD, my man.
All right. So,
hey, Jerry, hey, God bless you. Hey, Bobby, God bless
you.
Great seeing you, Bobby.
Good seeing you last week, man.
Man, hey, you know, this Peach State pandemonium, brother, man, you know, it's a great thing you're all doing, and thanks for having me on, and Bobo, I love you, man, and hey, you know, y'all, hey, anytime, brother. I'd love to come back on your show and, hey, you know, spread the word, man. Hey, I want to just be a goodwill ambassador for professional wrestling, man. You know, it's been so good to me, you know, and I love you guys, and God bless you. And please come see the Boogie Woogie Man. And, hey, check it out. It's Jimmy Valiant at Weebly.com, man. God bless you all, man. See you down the road, boys.
See you, man. Good night.
See you next week, Boogie.
Good night. Bye-bye. Right, bye-bye.
Night.
And the phone just got unplugged.
Yeah. He's not kidding. He told me, well, I said, you come do this show? He said, yeah. He said, when? I said, 8 to 10. He said, I'll do the first hour, baby. I got to go to bed.
He sounds like me.
There is no finer gentleman that I've ever come across.
You know the amazing thing about him, his interviews were unbelievable. He was always fired up. He'd go to the ring, he was fired up. He was one of the quietest guys in the dressing room I've ever been around.
Just play cards. He won't play cards. That's all he wants to get.
Didn't say a word.
No.
When him and Johnny came in here, my buddy Randy, that you worked in the office with me, you know, he had his accident, you know, where he messed his hip up probably a year, maybe a year and a half before. And Randy was in pretty bad shape. He walked bent over. He was in constant pain. He was having a lot of problems. And Jimmy probably don't remember this, but Jimmy would, he'd see Randy and he'd go, "Mercy, Daddy, when's the settlement going to come in?" And Randy told me, I told Randy last night, I said, we're going to have him on the show. He was telling the settlement came in. All right.
Oh, man. You know, that guy, you know, and I talk to Boogie every couple of days and have since I was 15 years old. And, you know, but people would knock him and Johnny while they weren't wrestlers and they weren't this and they weren't there. But, you know, I'm quick to tell them they were box office. You know, they drew money everywhere they went. They may not have had amateur backgrounds, but they knew how to draw money. Like Jerry said, they got on TV and both of them talking. They knew how to get people in the building.
Bottom line, putting butts in the seats.
Yeah, and you look at New York, to Charlotte, to Frisco, to Memphis, to Indianapolis, to Minnesota. I mean, they drew money everywhere they went. And two of the easiest guys in the world to get along with and to work with.
Oh, yeah, they were a pleasure, man. They were a pleasure. Absolute pleasure.
How much did you get to work with them, Jerry?
A lot here in Georgia.
Yeah. And it's
Did you ever work with that? Might have been, I can't remember what year it was, because I know Johnny. He came through here. He made a run through here as John L. Sullivan.
He was in here first as that.
Yes. Yeah.
That would have been
Let me tell you something. That was one funny guy. That was one funny joker.
Oh, yeah.
He
does stand-up comedy now. He lives in New York and does all the comedy clubs up in New York.
Well, I'm sure he does well.
He does. It's called An Evening with Johnny Valiant. He just tells stories from his years in the business and one-liner jokes and stuff that he's picked up along the way. And Jimmy's went up to see him a couple times, and he said he does about a 90-minute show, and he said it is great.
Oh, I'm sure. He had a wit about him, man. It was just unbelievable.
They may have not been blood brothers, but them two have stayed close like brothers all these years. Even all the years they were apart, working different territories after, because Johnny stayed in New York when Jimmy came south, but they still keep up with each other, and they're like family. So it's been a fun show. We're going to keep talking. I'm going to take a break right here. I got to get this break in. I'm going to come back and talk about the show coming up with Joyce Grable this weekend, and we'll talk about a few other things. So we'll be right back.
Wrestling fans, Anarchy Wrestling television tapings are the second and fourth Saturdays of every month at 4236 Level Grove Road in Cornelia, Georgia. For more information on Anarchy Wrestling and on the shows, to watch the television product and a whole lot more, go to anarchy-wrestling.net. That's Anarchy Wrestling, the second and fourth Saturdays of every month in Cornelia, Georgia.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
Whether you're having an autograph session, personal appearance, or live event, we got just the person you need to contact for all of those needs. SBI Bookings is home of some of the best stars in the wrestling industry today. They provide you with the best talent this business has to offer, from Kevin Nash, Larry Zbysko, Scott Steiner, and many, many more. So who will you contact next time you're planning an event? The men of SBI Bookings. Check them out at sbibookings.com.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Foley?
can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Still got both of you with me?
We're here.
Yes, sir.
All right. This, the last 2 weeks, blog talk has been crazy. So, hey, Jerry, did you ever work in New York for Vince Sr.?
No.
I was trying to remember if you was up there or not.
Nope.
Jimmy telling those Albano stories, man, that got us hundreds and hundreds of miles every week because he spent 6 years with him up there, and he had a new story about Lou Albano every day in the car. there's no characters like him left in our business.
No.
Nor is there anybody that I don't think could relate to that. So, I want to take your talk about Ox Baker. I don't know exactly what's happened to him, but I saw he's getting out of the hospital tomorrow. He's been in there for about a week now. I heard one report that he had a heart attack. One report said it wasn't a heart attack. I don't even know for sure if they know what it is, but he's been in the hospital for a week, and he sent out a thing today saying he's getting out tomorrow, and he was thinking everybody's been praying for him. And then Michael Norris told me last week that Buck Robley's got cancer. They just found out that. And we lost another one there yesterday, Bobby, from Mobile. Have you heard about Florence's service? I got one email.
Florence Fields passed away. She'd been battling cancer for a couple of years. She is, her service is Friday, tomorrow. Visitation, I think, is from 1 to 2 in Robertsville, Alabama. Robertsville, Alabama, and then they're going to do a graveside service. That's all tomorrow. Also, something I found out this week that Sylvia Hackney's husband, Phil Miller, passed away Monday in Memphis, and Sylvia's brother passed away the same day.
Oh, wow.
So she lost a husband and a brother on Monday. And another one that I found out about that we lost last week that just broke my heart, and anybody that ever met this woman, she was just an absolute pleasure to be around. Ella Waldick passed away.
She had been sick for some time too, hadn't she?
She had been fighting cancer for a lot of years.
Yeah.
Just what a joy she was to be around. And if you've ever seen the movie, or if you've never seen it, I would recommend seeing it. It's called Lipstick Dynamite.
Yeah.
And it's features her and Moolah and Mae Young and Killam Gillum and Gladys Gillum. And then it's Karen Dromo's in it, and I'm in it. I get a couple of shots there toward the end. I'm in it more than Charlie Smith, so I can always say that. So,
there, we got his name in. He'll be happy.
Yeah. So it's a pretty good movie to see, but. Yeah, it's and also Don, was his name, was it Don Duffy, Dan Duffy, guy that worked around the Gulf Coast area, he passed away last week as well.
Yeah, Don Duffy.
Yeah,
he worked in Tennessee too.
Yeah.
So, we've lost so many already this year.
Yeah, one of Jerry's proteges is living out with, is staying with Buck Robley and helped take care of him, I think.
Yeah.
Donut.
The donut.
Don Sanders.
I didn't. I What kind of cancer has Buck got? Bone cancer or something?
I heard it was in his spine.
In his spine,
yeah. Yeah, that's tough. Last time I talked to Buck, he was going in and have some kind of surgery. He thought it was like disc or something. I don't know.
I don't even know how many we've lost already this year, but it seems like, you know,
it's been a
we're
bad
up in
year.
The double digits already, it seems like.
Yeah, been a bad year. And let me throw this out there, too, for anybody, Bobby. Listen, I sent an email out yesterday regarding a memorial service this Saturday for Charlie McGowan, Scrappy McGowan's dad, and I kind of jumped the gun. The service this week is for the residents of the nursing facility where Charlie was living only. Scrappy's going to have a public memorial service in May, and we'll have some more details on that later on for anybody who might want to come pay their respects to Scrappy and his family and remember Charlie. But this one this week, he said, Scrappy said, because the facility's so small that they had to limit it to just the people at the nursing facility. So if anybody got that email and was planning on coming, please don't make the trip, but hold off till May when we can get you some more details on the public service.
And this Saturday night in Blue Ridge, we got the big event for George Grable. And I encourage anybody that's listening, that hears us out there, whether they're listening live or we're going to download it between now and Saturday. I hope they come out and support this event Saturday night, because what a wonderful lady. And, you know, we got to stick together and help her out here. And I talked to Woody a couple weeks ago, and he said he had wrestlers coming from Arkansas to North Carolina to be a part of this. So,
yeah, it's supposed to be a big show. He's supposed to have I know Bo and Misty are going to be there. And then besides that, they got some real good talent coming.
That's it. Susan Green, Bill White.
Susan Green, Bill White's coming down for it.
Got an all-girl battle royal.
Yeah.
A lot of good guys from around Georgia and Tennessee is going to be there. And, you know, even if you can't come, buy a ticket. I think they've got to set up where you can buy a ticket online, just, you know.
Or send money. I mean, I'll just be brazen and tell you to send money.
That's it.
If people don't know what's going on, Joyce is battling leukemia, and she's been undergoing chemotherapy for several months now. And in May, she is being inducted into the Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame up in New York. And when she gets back from there, she's going into the hospital for a bone marrow transplant. And she's going to have to live in an apartment in Atlanta for 3 months, because she can't be any more than 5 minutes away from the hospital for 3 months. So anybody that knows anything, and if you don't know, I've lived in Atlanta just about my whole life. Trust me, it's not cheap. Emory Hospital is not cheap, and that area around there is not cheap. So it's going to be a bit of a financial strain on that. And here again, I haven't talked about this with Joyce. I don't know what her insurance situation is, and you know, we could be talking $500,000 bucks for this transplant. I don't know. But that's what this is for. It's to help her. Anything that comes in is going to her, and, you know, it's that's what it's all about.
Well, and her spirits are so good when you talk to her. You know,
yeah.
I don't know how I would handle the same situation. You know, but her spirits are, she's upbeat. And, I mean, you know, it's on her mind. You know, I mean, I can't imagine what she's going through. But, you know, what a wonderful lady. And I'm happy to be there. I'm making the trip. And I hope a lot of other people make the trip, too.
Well, I guess I'll be there, because if I don't bring that money that they took up in Mobile for, y'all will be talking about me. So,
yeah,
Charlie's got it.
Oh man, when did you first meet her, Bobby? When did you first get to know Joyce?
1976, 77.
I refereed the first match she ever had on Atlanta TV. I actually have a copy of it. It was Moolah and Tony Rose against her and Susan Green.
Yeah, I have that match too. I didn't realize
that was
her
very first...
That
was her very first TV match.
Yeah.
And that was I met her either that day or somewhere shortly around that time. They may have been in the in here working the week before or whatever. I don't really know. It varied. But that's about the time I met her.
And she's one, if anybody's listening, and the only girl wrestling that they know is what they see on TV now, they need to go to YouTube and find Joyce Grable and check her out. And, I mean, that lady worked everywhere and worked hard. You know, and I can't express how much, you know, just coming to the matches Saturday is going to help her for anybody that's out there. And is Charlie coming up with you?
Yes, well, Charlie will be there. Scrappy's coming up. Mr. Randy will be there. And
well, now that the settlement's come in, the handsome
the whole
Jimmy
crew
may be
yeah.
there then.
Yeah. Mo, your Titans just took Chance Warmack, a guard from Alabama, with their first pick.
Really? Well,
yes.
The news report I heard today was wrong then.
Yep, they just took an offensive guard.
We need a new line on both sides of the ball. All new lines.
They went through 10 picks in this draft, and they might have – this is the second offensive player that they've taken. Everybody else has been defense.
Yeah.
First two players were, like, defensive linemen.
Is Geno Smith still hanging in there?
Who's that?
Geno Smith. Anybody taking him?
No, he's still in there.
Really? I figured he would have went high.
He's still there. No, nobody's taking the quarterback yet.
I watched the thing last night on ESPN about the 83 draft when everybody was taking quarterbacks. The year Marino and John Elway came in.
Oh, please.
Yeah. they went down through the list of people that were picked before both of them. And they all went from either playing one preseason game to maybe two seasons. And they were like in the middle of the draft.
Yeah, they weren't on draft picks. No.
Yeah. So
it goes to show you, doesn't it?
Yeah. Elway was drafted by the Colts and he refused. He was gonna go play baseball. But he had been drafted by the Yankees. Yeah, he
sure
was gonna go play for the Yankees. And until they traded him to Denver. And now he owns about half of that city. So you make a trip through Denver, you'll see John Elway Ford, eat at John Elway Buffet. He owns the arena team. He owns the minor league baseball team. You can't go three blocks without seeing his face. He's got his hands in everything out there. But, man, he played his whole career there, and people absolutely love him.
Well, y'all just have to excuse me. I've seen enough of him in the 1999 Super Bowl, and I don't care if I ever see him again.
Yeah. How was that trip home from that Super Bowl?
I'll be honest. I was happy to have made it to a Super Bowl after all them years, but it really didn't matter.
That's the way being an Oilers fan and a Titans fan when they went. I was the same way. I was just happy they were there.
I reached the point several years ago where if they win, it's a pleasant surprise, and if they don't win, I just try not to let it bother me too much anymore. So.
Oh Lord, I got Mr. Smith wanting to talk to us here. Let's see what he's got to say. You there, Charlie?
Yes, I am. I'm tired of that here about Renegade T-shirt company.
when we was having phone trouble there, Bobby, Gene called in. We did about a 3-minute commercial for Renegade T-shirts.
I better not book no more flights at 6 o'clock in the morning.
I got news for you. If he ever books me on a 6 o'clock flight out of Las Vegas in the morning anymore, Smith Novelty will need a new president. I was sitting on a bench. I was sitting on a bench at 20 minutes after 3 in Las Vegas time in the morning, and I was staring at the lights of Vegas, and Charlie says, "What are you thinking about?" And I said, "A way to kill you and get away with it."
He left in the middle of the afternoon and got to New York, and his flight was delayed. He didn't get home until like 3 in the morning.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. Boy. It sounded like everybody had trouble coming back from Vegas.
I was so tired. I got on that plane. They loaded us about 20 minutes till 6. I got on the plane. I buckled my seatbelt, and I put my head over against the window. I do not even remember that plane taking off. I woke up, looked at my watch, and I was about an hour and 15 minutes out of Atlanta.
How many people do you think was out there, Bobby?
They sold 510 or 15 tickets for the banquet Wednesday night.
I sold all the T-shirts and sweatshirts. Bobby didn't do nothing.
Yep, if y'all believe that, I'll see y'all some mountaintop property in Daytona Beach, too.
Does everybody go to the banquet, or there's still people that's there that don't go to the banquet?
No, there's people there that don't go to the banquet.
Yeah, so.
There was some come in. There was a couple of guys come in, and they sat down at the table with us. We had a couple empty seats. They came in after the meal was over just to see the presentations. They let them come in for that.
Yeah. Who accepted Percy's awards? We talked about it last week, but I never did hear who.
I don't know who they were. I don't have any names. They were two of his friends. They were. It was a pretty sad time there. But it was a. Somebody, one of his best friends. I'm not sure who they were. He looked. And I'm not trying to be judgmental. He looked like the Undertaker type. So this might be somebody Percy knew from the undertaking industry. And the other guy was somebody I think Percy helped train or something. But they were very – they gave very good acceptance speeches. And it was a pretty touching moment.
Yeah, I know he was looking so forward to that. You know, and that's another one we lost. And, man, it just – we come out of March and made it a little bit into April, and it seems like it started all over again.
Yeah, it just. Yeah, I was glad to see March leave, but now April's here toward the end of the month. It's trying to jump up and bite us.
Yeah. What's going down? What's happening on the island down there, Jerry? How's the summer looking?
Summer's going to be crazy. It's going to be crazy.
How crowded does it get there during June and July?
Well, we have like 2,400 parking spaces, and we get 10,000 cars.
Oof.
You do the math, and it ain't there. But, I mean, it happens. It's just, you know, since gas went up and all, and people don't go so far, they come there. It's just, you can't. I mean, it's all day long.
I've never been to Tybee. What is there to do on Tybee Island? Other than
same thing it
beach?
Is every island. Eat, go to the beach.
Okay.
They got a fort you can go through, Fort Scriven, and they got some historical stuff there. And,
okay.
But it's, you know, it's the end of Highway 80. The end.
How many people live there year round?
How many people live there year round? I'm not gonna tell you because I would be way off.
Yeah.
I mean it's not a big island at all.
Yeah. So they're happy to see fall come.
A lot of people though.
How far is it outside of Savannah?
It's probably 12 miles.
Oh, okay.
I live like I'm there in like 15 minutes.
There's a we may slip up on you one week, one Friday or something, and see you. Me and Debbie are going to go down to a we're going to take a long weekend and go to St. Simon's. We got there's a place there that we it's owned by the Methodist Church, but it's a resort they have there. It's called Epworth by the Sea.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of reminds me of St. Augustine. It's got a bunch of old oak trees and the moss, and they built a. It's not on the ocean side. It's actually on the canal side, back over toward the mainland on St. Simon's. But I had to go down there and do a wedding a few years ago, and we just kind of fell in love with it. We're going to go down there and just make a long weekend out of it.
It's pretty down there.
Yeah, I just Miss Debbie needs to get away for a couple of days, and we want to go eat at the Red Barn there on St. Simon's. That's
well, I might see you out there on a paddleboard coming by Tybee.
Yeah.
If you do, take pictures.
Yeah, if you catch me in the ocean, Bubba, you need to make some pictures.
Be a great white chomping at the back of it.
You ain't lying. But look, I can promise you, they wouldn't be nowhere in the area until they heard I was in the water, son, and there'd be a school of them come through there.
Them two they tagged off the bay in Massachusetts would find you. They saw them down there somewhere.
Yeah, they were right there off Tybee.
Yeah,
it was on Tybee.
Yeah, I saw that on CNN. I thought, wow.
Man, please.
That's why I stay out of the water.
Ain't no sharks out there, really? It's full of sharks out there. I don't know why these people don't get eaten alive out there. I honestly don't. Because the Coast Guard flies over, they'll tell us, y'all see the shadows we see out there. And they're not guppies either.
No. Man.
Yeah, that's it. That's stuff in the water you can't see, and it can kill you. And fast.
Well, last year it was so hot. The summer was so hot, and the water got so warm. They had these, they're called Portuguese man-o-wars.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've seen those.
Are they nasty looking?
Ooh.
Yeah.
And they're dangerous. I mean, very. You know, you can die from them. You know, if you're highly allergic to something like that, one of the guys that works works in the dispatch. He was out there laying on his back on a surfboard just resting, and one wrapped around his arm like he'd been burnt with hot wires.
Wow.
I mean, it actually burns you. No, I'm not going out there either, Bobby. Don't you worry about that.
Man.
If you ever hear anything happen to me at Tybee, you know a shark didn't get me.
I heard that. Well, yeah, my favorite thing to do at the beach, when I do go to the beach, I like to get me a lounge chair and put it just where the water will just, as it washes up on the beach, about a half inch of it will hit the end of the chair. And I like to sit in the chair and let my feet get wet, but that's hard.
You're satisfied.
That's, you know, just waiting. There's stuff just, you know, ankle deep out there that'll get you.
Oh, yeah. Jellyfish. There's all kind of stuff out there, man.
How long have you lived down there now, Jerry?
4 years.
How much of a culture shock was that from Columbus?
Not much, because I've come over here all my life, you know.
Yeah.
Some do.
I take the mountains over to the beach any day. Of course, there's stuff in the mountains that can eat you, too, that you don't see. like bears.
My wife always wanted to live in the mountains. I said, if you're in the mountains, you're in the mountains. Now what? You know, I mean, I mean, they're gorgeous, but, you know, around here, you got the rivers, you got... I love it here. I really do. It's so beautiful. The downtown's so beautiful. It's historical, and it's just absolutely gorgeous.
Was there anywhere you ever worked when you was in the territories that you thought you may live there one day?
Kansas City.
Yeah.
I love living there. And I love Portland.
Yeah, Portland, man, that northwest is great.
Yeah, I could have lived there. In fact, my wife wished we would stay there. It was, I really liked it there. It's laid-back life, you know.
Yeah. Did you live in the bomber when you was out there?
No.
Yeah.
I have an apartment.
Most the boys stayed at the bomber, and it's still there. Lynn Denton took us by there when we was out there to see it.
I sure would like to talk to Lynn.
Well, I got his number. I'll send it to you. I'll email it to you.
Do that, but
yeah.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah, he's there, I guess, for life. I don't think he's ever coming out of Portland.
And he was from Texas, too, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was from around Houston somewhere. I don't think right in Houston, but from that part of Texas.
Yeah, Lynn was a good guy.
Yeah. That's another place. There was a lot of boys come out of that area.
Yeah. You said they're trying to start it back up, huh?
They're trying to get Portland going. What I've seen with their TV, they got a real good production of it, and they got some good young guys out there. You know, it's different out there than it is anywhere else. Because you don't have people. There's only four or five people in all the Northwest that even run wrestling. So I mean, they got a good TV and can work together, they may be able to do something there.
Who's doing it, Lynn and who?
Piper somehow is involved in it, and Channel 12,
who?
Roddy Piper.
Oh, Piper.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing was just Channel 12 wanted wrestling back on because they carried it for all those years, and I read somewhere the other week they said that they're showing one segment a week. They just show old stuff from Owens. They'll show a match or two from 70s and 80s, what they've got in the limited library that they've kept over the years.
Right.
So they give them a little bit of the past plus what they're doing, but they've been running some towns too, because I saw where they ran Milwaukee and a few other of them old towns around Portland.
No
but
kidding.
They do the TV right in the studio. You know, it's studio wrestling. I think that's the only one in the country doing the studio show now.
And you know what? Really and truly, there was really nothing wrong with that.
No.
No.
Yeah. I mean, really.
I always thought that was the best place anyway, you know, because when they did show something from an arena, you knew it was special. It caught your attention. You know, you stopped and paid more attention to that because you knew it was important. They're going to show what happened that week somewhere.
Right. But, you know, it's like everything else. Things change, but it doesn't always change for the better, you know.
Yeah. Such an easy format, you know.
So easy.
Memphis did it all the way. Channel 5 did studio wrestling from 77 to 2002. They're in Memphis. You know, they did the one, and I kind of think that was one of the things that hurt Fuller in Alabama when he took the TV out of the studio and put it in the arena, because people knew that, well, we don't have to go to the arena. We can watch it on TV Saturday.
There you go right there.
Yeah.
It kind of took the mystique of what was going to go on in the arena away from it.
Yeah. And same thing in Charlotte. They did Channel 5 in Raleigh for all those years, and then they moved them. Started taping in Shelby and Rock Hill and all them smaller rec buildings around there. And you look at right there in Atlanta, that studio show, man, it did business everywhere they took it on the road.
Oh, please, everywhere. So what does that tell you?
Yeah. Sometimes they overthink things. With Jimmy, they wanted something new. Well, they got it. And then it gets to that point of what else? Now what do we do?
What are you talking about?
Now what do we do? What do we do?
You know, the you're exactly right. And they overthink it. And the thing about, you know, Barnett for years and years and years, you know, we had people all over the country tried to put shows on other stations here in Atlanta. They wanted to, you know, we had a lot of little independent, you know, 36 at the time was independent. Channel 69 in Atlanta was independent. And they were wanting to put their shows, like Jarrett tried to put a show in here for years, you know, and Barnett always blocked it because Barnett's philosophy was, if you can sit and watch 4 or 5 hours of TV wrestling, why do you buy a ticket to go see it? And you know, we would show, you're right, we would show something every once in a while that we filmed on Friday night, or we filmed at the Omni or whatever. But it always served a specific purpose. It was never just to say, here's a match from the Omni. And
Just to show some skullduggery you'd pull in the ring, Bobby. That's
yeah, there you go.
Was.
There you go. You know, it was yeah. something. You know,
and like you said, it meant something, you know. It,
yeah. Well, that's just like, and here again, I guess I'm a disgruntled NFL football fan. I got upset when they started showing home games on TV in the metro market, because here again, I'm buying a ticket to go to the stadium to see the game, and people that are never going to spend a dime are sitting at home watching it for nothing. And I understand some people can't afford to go, and I'm not, that ain't really my bone of contention, but you got some people that could afford to go that won't, because they know they can sit at home watch it free. Well, I had to ask myself the question, why am I buying a ticket to go watch what I can sit at home and watch free? And I don't guess I came up with the right answer, because I'm still paying for the ticket.
See, they know there's enough of you folks like that.
I guess.
Hey. Me and Mister, we drive to Nashville a few times a year, watch home, you know, go watch live in Nashville, but it's experience too. You know, it's an experience to go to the NFL game. And it used to be an experience to go to the wrestling matches. I mean, I don't, you know, I loved standing in line as a kid with my dad and my uncle, just listening to everybody around there talking about it and excited about what they're going to see today.
Yeah.
You know, Jimmy Valiant's going to get Joe LeDuc today. You know, or are we going to see the Assassin's Hoods taken off today? I mean, that was, you know, and it's just a form of, hey, Jerry, when you was in Portland, did they do the TV on Saturday and they were still coming back with a house show on Tuesday?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. See, I like that formula, too. That was a good, because he let them in free on Saturday nights, let the kids in free, and there was always
then,
a couple.
But then he would run something called a Saturday Night Special.
Yeah.
No, it's like a house show, another house show.
Yeah.
He had it down to a science project out there.
Yeah. And they used that same formula the whole entire time they ran. It never changed.
It was working.
Never more than 12 guys in that territory. Never was there more than 12 guys there. Most time it was 10. You know. And had Sandy Barr reffing. I mean, it just... And you made money. They had some exciting TVs there too. The guy that I'm trying to think of his name. He was the first announcer. He died in '82 or '83. But yeah, I got some of the stuff from that Buddy Rose had taped from the late '70s that Rich out in Portland had taken from those old 2-inch tapes and put on DVD. And I mean, it's just. You can feel the excitement on that Portland TV through just watching it. I mean, you can feel the excitement in the people.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah, it's that building's a church now. It's a Baptist church.
Is it really?
Yeah. We went. Lynn told us how to get over there, and we went and went in the door, and the woman looked at me and she said, "Can I help you?" And I said, "I said, is this the sports arena?" And she said, "Yeah, come on, I'll show you everything." She said, "People come in here every day." And
I bet.
She took us around because she went there as a girl to the matches, and she showed us where the dressing rooms were. I mean, but you can still see it, you know, looking at it. I mean, they've remodeled it, but you can still see how everything was laid out. And then, it's kind of fitting that it's a church. I mean, it's kind of it's a holy place for wrestling people out there. They ran that building for decades, and then people grew up in that building.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Same thing in Kansas City. That Kansas City Memorial Hall is one of the best buildings I ever. I stopped there and talked my way into it when I was going out there. We went through Kansas City, and I pulled over there, and the security guard, I talked to him, and he took us through the building, showed us everything, and the ring is still in there.
Is it really?
Me and my buddy Scotty, we said, "Can we put the ring up?" And he said, "What for?" I said, "We're going to have a match." He said, "Nobody knows how to put that ring up. It's been laying back there for 20 whatever years." I said, "Buddy, I can put any ring up. You just show it to me. I'll show you how it goes together."
That's something, man.
I tell you something there, Jerry. He took us upstairs where the office was at.
Yeah.
you walk in there, it's like the Twilight Zone. Because when you walk in, it's just like it was when they closed down. And the guy that worked there, he had worked the security on Thursday nights at the matches. And he said they just came in one day and said the wrestling's done, that's the end of it. But on the desk, there was a telephone, and right beside the desk was a handwritten word. Somebody had wrote out the card for that week and what the ticket prices were.
Okay, but they still using in. That building, right?
They still use it, but they don't use the stuff upstairs. Well, they did. This was in 2004 when I was in there.
Okay.
But I took pictures all in there. I mean, what a great building that was.
Oh, it was an unbelievable building.
Let me throw something in before I forget to mention it. We were talking about things that had happened, things that went on. Y'all were talking about Portland. Dutch Savage had a stroke a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, yeah. I've got his daughter on Facebook. She said that he's able to speak, but he's still partially paralyzed on one side. So,
how's it going?
Throw some good wishes out that way. I talked to Michael the other day, and he said, make sure I mentioned that. And I got to talking about Portland.
Yeah. I wonder how many of the buildings are still standing. They're getting ready to tear the Mid-South Coliseum down. They're going to tear the Louisville Gardens down. They're trying to get rid of the building in Nashville. The Omni's gone. The old building here in Johnson City is getting ready to be tore down, they say. I mean, there's so many of them that are gone and very few left that's still standing.
Bobby, let me ask you a question. When they tore the Omni down and put the Phillips Arena back in the same place, right?
Yes, sir.
Was there that much difference? Or did it seat another 10,000 people?
No,
or what?
No. Seating capacity is almost identical. It's almost identical. The big difference between the two buildings. Now, I say this. I've been in Phillips Arena twice since it's been up, okay? One time I went and saw Paul McCartney there. I won some tickets, and then I took my goddaughters to see Sesame Street, you know. But the big difference in the two buildings and what I read and what I understand the difference in wanting this building they've got now, it has more private boxes. So they could make more money selling private boxes than they had at the Omni.
Well, couldn't they a little bit of money put some more boxes in compared to tearing it down and building a whole new building?
Well, yeah, listen, there's no rhyme or reason.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking at a 72,000-seat dome right here in downtown Atlanta that's 25 years old, and we just approved a $1 billion new stadium with a retractable roof that they're going to build 30 feet from the existing dome. They'll be 30 feet apart. And then as soon as the new one's open, they're going to implode the dome.
And who's paying for that?
Well, the Falcons are paying $800 million of it, and the other $200 million is coming out of the motel hotel tax. So supposedly the majority of the money is coming from outsiders that visit Atlanta. But if you believe that, here again, I got some mountaintop property in Daytona Beach I'd like to talk to you about.
All this stuff is really madness, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I can't, the whole thing, the NFL wants, they say Atlanta will never get another Super Bowl unless they build a new stadium because it's got to be newer, bigger, better, faster, shinier, I mean, I don't know. Atlanta just got awarded, the Peach Bowl just got awarded one of the semifinals. They're going to be in the rotation for the college semifinals when they start having that playoff in a couple of years. In 2016, we get the first. We'll either get 1-4, or 1-3, or 2-4 of the ranking college teams in their playoff game. Well, that game's going to be played at the Georgia Dome because the new stadium will not be open until 2017, they say. So, I mean,
how much of a mess is that going to make of downtown while they're building that new place next door?
Well, it's kind of hard to explain. The dome actually sits in what was the old railroad gulch. Years ago, the Memorial train station, which was right downtown Atlanta, all the lines, they called it Terminal Station because there were so many train lines terminated right here in Atlanta. And they all ran, they kind of built the city over the top of that gulch and a series of viaducts and bridges and things so that you know, you didn't, as the trains came into town, you didn't stop traffic. You just kind of went over the top of them. So it will cause some congestion down there, but it's not as much as if they were building it somewhere else.
Now, how many more seats is this thing going to hold?
They tell me it's going to hold about 80, 85,000. So probably another 15,000 over what they've got now. But the big feature supposedly of the new stadium is, here again, more private boxes. Falcons will be able to control. The Falcons will make the revenue off of a lot of the things going on at the stadium that they don't now because it's owned by the state. The dome is. And it'll have a retractable roof, so they'll be able to play games.
What's they going to do for the ticket prices?
Don't know yet. They're talking about a PSL, a private, you know, a personal seat license. Now, I heard that wasn't going to pertain to the upper deck, and that's where my seats are, and that's where they are by choice because I like to set up high. But I don't know if they go to a PSL. Of course, you know, I don't know if I'll live that long or not, but if I do and I'm still able to go and they try to charge me a PSL, I will not be going. Because I'm not paying $2,000 for the right to buy a season ticket.
Yeah, that's, gosh. Oh, you know, you can sit at home and watch it.
you know, it's like anything else. You know, you can price yourself out of something.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I've seen that right here with NASCAR, right here in Bristol. They just outpriced herself.
You could flat do it.
And, you know, some of these college games are getting to that point, too.
My Georgia Tech tickets this year, the price of the college tickets are based on who they're playing.
Georgia Tech's
got two games this year at home against two of these Sisters of the Poor teams. I don't remember who they are, but the tickets for those games are $25 a piece. If it's an ACC game, the tickets are like $60 a piece.
I had no idea.
But
Marshall University does that too. That's
the big in-state rivalry, the Georgia Tech game. That ticket's $90 this year, my boy.
Yeah.
So yeah. You know, it's supply and demand, I guess.
Yeah, Marshall does the same thing. If they play a big school, that they it's all, every seat is one price. But if they play somebody in conference, you have different ticket prices. You can, you know, up higher is cheaper than down lower, you know. But if they play like Virginia Tech, every seat's $70, no matter where you sit. Because they got to give that money to that bigger school, too. They got to give them their percentage.
Yep.
You know. So it's just it's the world we live in. And it's only going to get worse.
I think I'd be better off. Better off get me a traveling crap table.
I heard that, brother. Let me tell you something. I watched some folks throw some money away last week.
Make you sick to your stomach, don't it?
Man, I was over watching them throw dice at the crap table, and I don't understand that game at all. Only part I understand is where they rake all that money in and keep it. And they was. It was
interesting. The odds are not with you.
No, they don't build those. They didn't build those places on winners. They build them on losers.
That's exactly right. Well, we're out of time. Hope everybody's back with us next Thursday night. And I'm not sure who we're going to have yet, but I'll be working on here next couple of days. And Bobby and Jerry, thank you for being with me, and I'll talk to you guys next Thursday night.
Thanks,
good night, guys.
Good night.
Safe,
enjoy it.
Bye bye.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.